Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's guest speaker will be Terry Kroger, the publisher and chief executive officer of the Omaha World Herald. He'll talk about the recent sale of the newspaper to Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway, the future implications of the sale, how it will affect the business and news operations of the paper, and some of the history leading up to the purchase, as well as some of the major players who are involved in the decision. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, February 16, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Hugh Cowden, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Today we're going to talk about the purchase of the Omaha World Herald by Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. And to do that, we're privileged to have the publisher and CEO of the newspaper, Terry Kroger. Terry joined the World Herald in 1985 and became the sixth publisher in the newspaper's history in January of 2008. He is a graduate of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and his involvements in professional and civic organizations, both local and beyond, are many. Terry was born in Omaha, and he and his wife, the former Jackie Pfeiffer, have four children. He has said that he is especially pleased that the purchase of the World Herald by Berkshire Hathaway will keep ownership of the newspaper in Omaha. The Omaha Press Club conducts forums on a lot of different topics, journalistic and otherwise, but the Education Committee felt that, since we are, after all, a press club, there could be no more important topic to discuss than this one. So will you please join me in welcoming the publisher of the World Herald, Mr. Terry Kroger.
Thank you, Hugh, and I want to thank the Omaha Press Club for inviting me here to speak today. My first reaction was to wonder how many more worthy speaker candidates were either busy or not interested before you issued the invitation to the likes of me. And I also wondered if the call was intended for some of our more famous or gifted staff members, Mike Kelly, Rainbow Rowell, Tom Chattel, or recent radio sensation Dirk Chatelain. But we double-checked, and you indeed did invite me, so here we go. I will pledge brevity, which is valued by most listeners of speeches. Please don't expect any proclamations, shocking announcements, or other things that might rise to a committing news level. Rather, I'll offer some facts and observations about the Berkshire transaction, and I'd be happy to take questions if you have any. First, though, I wanted to share with you a story about a couple guys with whom I went to high school. I recently attended my 30-year reunion from Westside High School here in Omaha. There were two classmates of note. One struggled mightily to even graduate, often relying upon help from many of us to get through. One of his closest friends was our valedictorian, truly one of the smartest people I've ever been around. The smart guy, now a high-powered attorney on Wall Street, behaved as you might expect. He showed up for the reunion having flown first class, rented the big Mercedes at the airport, stayed in the finest suite at the hotel, and his wife arrived with an obvious jewelry collection that probably should have been accompanied by a security detail. The not-so-smart guy, on the other hand, flew in a private jet, rented a mansion for his visit, and threw a huge catered bash for all of his classmates in the rented mansion. This confused all of us, but mostly the high-powered Wall Street lawyer. So finally, after a couple of drinks, he mustered up the courage to ask his friend about his apparent wealth. The not-so-smart guy answered his question like this: "Well, it's interesting. I found this product that I can buy for $2 and sell for $5. And you know what? On that 3%, you can make a hell of a lot of money." I love telling that story because it's interesting to gauge the audience by the speed of their reaction. I think it's a study in math aptitude, but I've never kept track of the results. This group did remarkably well, by the way. So much for my stand-up comic career and about this Berkshire Hathaway transaction. To put this into context, I need to go back in time a few years, specifically to 2008 when the Great Recession began. This was the year of the historic meltdown in the stock market, when the joke was that everyone's 401k was now a 201k. The S&P 500 dropped by 42% between August and November of 2008. Routinely, we saw 600 or 800-point swings in the Dow daily. Lehman Brothers failed. TARP became a new word with which we all became familiar. It was a historic time. None of us had ever seen anything like it. There was fear, panic, and retrenching. I'm sorry I had to take you through that, but those factors led to the first stock price decline in our 30 years of employee ownership. And that stock price decline came at a time when most Americans were nervous about their investments, and significantly that the obituary of American newspapers was being prematurely and inaccurately written almost daily in national media outlets. The ground rules for our employee ownership gave each of our shareholders the right to put his or her stock back to the company at any time, which means that if all of those shareholders decided to sell their stock back to the company at the same moment, the company would be unable to accommodate those sales. I think it's safe to say that very few businesses would be able to repurchase all of their equity at any given moment. So in late 2008, all of these factors were facing the capital side of our business. So we took two actions that were extremely difficult, but in hindsight, turned out to be precisely the right decision. In December of 2008, our board declared a standstill on all repurchases of stock for at least a four-month period. To the great credit of our employee shareholders and the Peter Kiewit Foundation, which owned 20% of our stock, our colleagues understood this action and complied with it. Then in April of 2009, our shareholders voted to limit the liquidity of their own stock to 5% per year for active employees and 10% per year for retirees. For our shareholders to limit their own liquidity was historic and visionary. And ultimately, it was a huge lift in putting us in place to be attractive to a buyer such as Berkshire Hathaway. Also in 2008 and 2009, you'll recall that the retail industry was being hit hard as Americans realized they had too much debt and began to pay down their credit cards and contribute to savings plans rather than buy the extra big screen TV or the sports car. So our advertisers pulled in their horns as they prepared to ride out the recession. So our revenues dropped, as was the case with so many businesses across the country. In 2009 and 2010, we made difficult operating decisions. We reduced our staff. We took a 5% pay cut across the board. We implemented a one-week furlough. And I want to emphasize this, we made money every year throughout the Great Recession. I'm very proud of what our management and staff was able to do in light of the challenges we faced. I will always lament the departures we made with many of our colleagues, but I know we made the right calls. In 2010, we had one additional major hurdle to address. Our revolving line of credit was set to expire in November of 2010, and our bank, Key Bank of Cleveland, had made it clear that they, quote, no longer provided financing in the media space. This action, plus the earlier toxic reputation that had been attached to our industry, made this a daunting challenge. With a big assist from the Bank of America and U.S. Bank, accompanied by locally First National, Mutual of Omaha Bank, and Bankers Trust out of Des Moines, we solved this problem in September of 2010 with competitive rates, flexible terms, and great relationships. For this entire period, we continued to pay dividends, which were important cash flow for our shareholders who had borrowed money to buy their stock. We produced earnings and repurchased shares under the 5% and 10% formula I mentioned earlier. By the end of 2010, we had addressed our short-term capital issues and had a system that was working. And we began to work on longer-term solutions to our capital issue. Specifically, how do you cash out exiting shareholders while bringing newer, younger shareholders into significant ownership positions? An issue faced many times by multi-generation family businesses was really being presented to us. Our board formed a capital planning committee, which included several of our executives, and Paul Jessen, who tragically passed away earlier this week. And as a side note, for us at our place, that's like a death in our own family. Paul was a great advisor and a great friend, and and we will miss him terribly as we go forward. This committee met regularly, working hard to produce scenarios to address this long-term capital issue. In the summer of 2011, our capital planning group had produced several ideas that we sought to implement by changing the company's articles of incorporation. To change those articles is complicated because it required the approval of the Peter Kiewit Foundation trustees and a probate judge, as the PKF ownership is governed by Mr. Kiewit's will. The Peter Kiewit Foundation was terrific to work with and appointed Moens Bai and John Hancock to serve as their subcommittee to work with our group on possible article changes. It was during those discussions that our group had concluded that we needed to seek long-term capital from a source outside of our employee shareholder pool. Around that same time, Moens Bai went on a fishing trip with Walter Scott. And Walter said to Moens that he had been expecting a call from me. I believe he referred to me as that Kroger guy at the newspaper. And why hadn't I come to meet with him? Walter was asking because I'd seen him at a civic event and asked if I could come visit with him about the newspaper. Candidly, I hadn't called him for an appointment because I wasn't sure what I was going to ask him for. And I figured a guy like Walter Scott, you got to have your act together before you go see him. Moens Bai, though, gave me this piece of advice. You need to go see Walter, Terry. I did. On October 3rd of last year, I spent about 45 minutes in Walter Scott's office and gave him an overview of our business and the capital issues we faced. I was amazed at how quickly Walter grasped the situation, and he left me with two thoughts. First, he said, "You're doing a lot better than I would have thought." Then he said, "I'll visit with Warren and we'll see what we can do." What I thought they might do would be some long-term preferred stock or some other equity instrument. But on October 18th, I was in the Midway Airport coming home from a newspaper meeting. My cell phone rang and it was Moens Bai. Moens said that he had just talked with Walter and, quote, "Warren thinks the best way to solve the capital issue is for him to buy the company." I was completely stunned, and I had never considered a sale of the business. Moens said that he had told Walter this might not be attractive to management. I told Moens I'd like to sleep on it, and I'd like to call him the next day. I asked him an important question. I asked him how the foundation would view such a transaction. He made what I suspect he didn't realize was a giant statement. "Because it's Warren, we would be very enthusiastic." I had about an hour and a half in my very comfortable Southwest Airlines airplane seat to think about this, armed only with a pen and a legal pad. I wrote down every thought I had, pros and cons, ups and downs, went completely around the horn. And by the time the wheels touched down at Epley, I had decided that this made great sense and was an elegant solution to our long-term capital challenges. I called Moens the next day to tell him that, and then I set up a follow-up meeting with Walter Scott on October 21st and told him I'd be interested in pursuing a sale. The following Monday, I was in Dallas at our direct marketing plant there, and I was waiting in line for the rental car, and Walter Scott called me. And he said that Warren had requested 3 years of audited financial statements, plus our interim financials for 2011. I arranged to get those documents to Warren's office, and I believe they got there after he had left for the day. The following day, I had an early flight back from Dallas and landed in Omaha around 10. And at 11, my assistant poked her head in my office and said, "Warren Buffett's on the phone," which doesn't happen a lot, so it was a little unusual. I took the call, and Warren said that he had looked at our financial statements and that there were a few things not addressed in them, and would I have a few minutes to meet with him today? I said yes, and we agreed on a 1:30 meeting, and he said, "Okay, I'll be at your office at 1:30. I stopped him and suggested that I might come up to his office, as his appearance at our building might cause a little commotion. He said, "All right, whatever you'd prefer." I mean, he's just didn't really get it. So we met in his office, and I've got to tell you, I don't get nervous very often. I do things like this a lot that it doesn't make me uncomfortable, but I was really keyed up on my drive up to Kiewit Plaza. To Warren's credit, I was instantly comfortable once I sat down in his office. We chatted about some specific questions produced from the financials, but mostly about the challenge and opportunities facing our business, how we might grow it, opportunities we see, things like that. He closed the meeting by saying that the offer is for your book value plus the value of your preferred stock if you're interested. I said okay, and we were off and running. From there, we received a one-page letter of intent from Warren later that week. I'm not exaggerating, one side of one page. And we were off and running toward a sale transaction. Warren appeared as a surprise guest in an informal meeting of our shareholders on November 30th of last year. Our shareholders approved the transaction at a special meeting in December. The question I get most about all of this is, what's it like working for Warren, or some variation? I can tell you that it's precisely as advertised. He wants us to treat the business as though we owned it, including expenditures of capital or other decisions. It's a great model when you think about it. He finds managers with whom he's comfortable and places the decision burden on them, which carries the responsibility for those decisions, whether they're successful or not. My access to Warren has been great, but I think it's salient here to note that he doesn't call me. If I would like his counsel or to bring him up to speed on something, I call his office, and I've never not been granted quick access to him. But he doesn't call to offer his advice. He has never, and I repeat, never called me about a news issue or an editorial position. We discussed this during our first meeting on the sale topic. Warren Buffett is smart enough to know that he bought a business with incredible credibility, great credibility, which is our most precious asset. I can't imagine a scenario where he would look to interfere with our coverage decisions or editorial positions. And I would add, if that were the case, I think many of our best people would no longer value their working relationship. In short, that would be bad for business, and I don't ever worry about it. Haven't worried about it for one second. Berkshire Hathaway, under Warren's leadership, is an exemplary owner, and I just couldn't be happier with the arrangement. As to other ways this helps our business going forward, more than anything, I think it frees up our management to concentrate on growing our business, developing our employees, creating new products, and being more competitive than ever. As I like to say, spending less time with lawyers, bankers, and accountants. Not that I don't love lawyers, bankers, and accountants, but I think this is probably better for our business. I'm bullish on our company and on the opportunities in front of newspapers. I'd close by saying that this is going to be fun. If there are questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Terry.
Sure.
We have questions here written from the audience. Does Warren have his own money invested in the World Herald, or is it all Berkshire?
We're a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway, but I'm pretty sure he's got a lot of his own money invested in that company, if I remember right. So I think the answer is both.
How many reporters do you have versus the number you had in the, quote, good days?
I was told there would be no math. I don't have that number in my head. It is less than it was before, but I think we've done better than most newspapers at preserving as much of our content providers as we possibly could.
How is the World Herald competing with other media in the current environment?
That changes almost daily, and I would just say as ferociously as possible, and we will continue to do so. And I think we've done a better job than many of our colleagues in competing in these new landscapes.
I can't read all of this. The newspaper, size-wise, is much smaller. Are you covering?
Okay,
yeah, it looks like cooking. Are you covering?
It does say cooking, I think, but I think they mean covering.
Are you covering as much news as you used to?
I think we do. I think what we've done, we haven't changed our page count. Mike Holmes helped me out with this in at least 3 or 4 years, right? And the changes we've made were really, I think, to make smarter use of our space. For example, not publishing the stock tables was a big difference, a big change we made. And I think that's accessible a lot of other places, and so it was less critical to people. I'm not less than we used to. I don't think we cover less than we used to. We're probably smarter about how we use our space, would be my assessment.
Can, excuse me, can newspapers survive in the current environment?
Yes.
How can you get young people more engaged in reading newspapers?
I think the question is that's one question which is difficult. A lot of people prefer iPads and iPhones and laptops and so forth to the printed newspaper, and that's just a fact. I think the bigger question is, how do we make sure that they are interested in credible, interesting, relevant content, regardless of distribution channel? And that's something that I think we're doing a lot better job than we did even 2 or 3 years ago, and we're continuing to grow that audience all the time. So I think it's a matter of what's interesting to people, and I do think that people ultimately want a credible source that does check facts and does make sure that we're printing truth and not rumor. So I think we're doing a great job with attracting younger readers, not necessarily in the ink on paper business.
Have the employees embraced the change in ownership?
Well, some of them are here. You could ask them. I think so. I think I haven't heard a lot of negatives about it. I think there was a pride. I'd tell you my view as an employee owner. There was a major pride in being, you know, really the only remaining employee-owned newspaper in America of any size. That hurts your feelings just a little bit. But when you think it through, the pragmatic solution really outweighed the kind of the personal pride of it. So I think our employees understand it. I think it couldn't be a better solution. If it had been some leverage buyout roll-up from Poughkeepsie, I think we would have had a big problem having our employees embrace it. But because of who the owner is, and because of our familiarity with him and his reputation and Berkshire's reputation, I don't think we've had a lot of pushback.
What are the most important elements in keeping newspapers viable, and how does the internet play in this?
The most important elements in keeping any media outlet viable are audience and sales. So you've got to attract an audience, and we now have multiple forums with which to attract that audience. And we have, what was our page views last month, Joel? 18 million, something of that ilk. So we've done a nice job of attracting those audiences. Now the trick is not to give it away for free, right? So I think the internet it helps us in that we get access to a much larger pool of viewers, I guess you were, or readers, and it gives us more opportunities to sell than we've ever had before. So we're excited about that. It's clearly a threat to the ink on paper business, which, by the way, remains very good today.
Where do you see the paper 5 years from now?
Is this a job interview? I think we're gonna be different. I think we'll be better at multi-channel each of those 5 years. We're not gonna wait 5 years to get there, but we'll keep improving upon that. I think we'll own other businesses, and I can't tell you what they are now that we don't own today. That are allied to us either in the information business or the advertising business. And I think we'll be having more fun. I think this is going to be a hoot.
This is related to a couple of previous questions. Tell us about 5 to 10 years from now, still a printed edition or will it all be online?
I'm in the camp that we would still have a printed edition, and I can't tell you the volumes of those two. I think the online will continue to grow. It's growing, been growing at a very rapid pace. But I think there'll be a need for and a demand for a printed newspaper certainly 5 or 10 years from now.
Just in dollar terms, the Omaha World Herald seems to represent less than 0.1% of Berkshire. Does the paper's performance matter to Warren Buffett?
We're familiar with the idea that some might say a rounding error on Berkshire's income statement. I think their net earnings last year was it $12 billion or some really big number that is a lot bigger than our company. So we understand that. So the first question is, that's accurate. The second part of that is, do I think our performance matters to Warren Buffett? Absolutely. I send him a set of financials every month, and he reads them, and I think he pays attention to them, and I think he's proud of them. I know that he reads our paper every day, so I think if our performance went downhill, I think he would notice very quickly. So, yeah, I think it matters, and it's probably not entirely economic, but the results we're producing, I'm proud of him, and I think our owner's proud of him as well.
How do you think he would make that judgment? On what basis, if he thought the paper was going downhill?
Well, I think in terms of our ability, our amount of coverage, our the way we display our coverage, the kinds of things we report upon, our ability to help with agenda setting and bringing people's bringing people up to speed on important issues facing the city. I think if those issues started to fall off, I think a lot more people than just Warren Buffett would notice that, and that's just not something we can engage in.
Prior to this sale, your bank was out of town. Where do you bank now, locally?
Well, we've always banked locally, just to be clear. We use several local banks. I think I recited them earlier when we redid our revolver. And so we've always had great relationships with our local banks, and we'll continue to do so.
Does the World Herald grant discounts in advertising to other Berkshire companies?
That depends on how much advertising they buy.
Okay. You're on Facebook. What is your view of the social media?
Well, I have a Facebook. I would have to confess, I first got a Facebook account so I could keep track of what my daughters were saying on it. So that's how I got to do it. I think it's interesting. I worry about it not as a newspaper guy as much as an American, that I think people tend to really waste a lot of time with some of that stuff. And so some of it I think is productive, and some of it I think is pretty silly. I mean, the mafia games and all the stuff that people do, I just worry about America's productivity. When I suppose there was a day when people might have read books or watched a documentary or done something that was maybe a little more productive. So I think it's a neat tool, but I worry about kind of the addiction factor on it.
In the internet age, do there continue to be restrictions on newspaper ownership of broadcast media outlets?
Yes, there are still restrictions on newspapers' ownership of broadcast media outlets. It's interesting. Scott, you know more about this than I would. I think there's an exception. Is it the top 50 markets? So that exception is loosened in the giant markets, but still applies to places like Omaha or Lincoln or Des Moines and markets like that.
Do you have immediate plans to improve Omaha.com?
That sounds like a trick question. We work hard to try and improve Omaha.com every day, and our goal, and our team would tell you, I harp on this constantly, we want to make our visitor experience as positive as possible, whether they're trying to spend money with us or put a vacation stop in or whatever it is they're there to do. And I think we, like many websites, still have lots of work to do. But it's fun stuff, and I think you're going to see it get better all the time.
Do Berkshire employees and shareholders get a discount on the paper?
World Herald employees get some modest discount, but outside of that, we haven't addressed any of our new colleagues yet. So,
is the weekly Buffett Watch column going to continue? Does Warren consider, or how does Warren consider the column a nuisance, or does he enjoy the coverage?
First of all, on the Warren Watch, I see Steve Jordan's in the back of the room. I'd ask him that question because that's a judgment that'll be made in our newsroom, as it should be. And I hope he likes the coverage. As I said before, we've never had a discussion about that, and I don't expect to. So he's an important news figure for us to cover. We will continue to cover him just as we have, and don't look for any change in that.
If you are owned by a multinational company with investors from around the world, can you say that you are locally owned? Isn't there more to that than just an address?
Well, I guess I'd ask if Kiewit is locally owned. They have operations in Australia and Canada and so forth now, and I would say they are. Union Pacific Railroad's headquarters here is awfully meaningful. So I think we are indeed locally owned. The chairman of the board is literally up the street, and so I guess I would respectfully disagree with that assessment.
How many employee-owned newspapers are left in the United States?
Other than the ones that would be small papers that are owned by a kind of a family owner, of any size, I'm confident that we were the last newspaper standing in that environment. Milwaukee went public 5 years ago, something of that nature, and they were always the largest. And then when they went public, we were the largest remaining employee-owned paper. It's not a common ownership structure these days.
How has the reduction of the World Herald affected local news coverage? That is, are there stories that you can no longer cover that you might have covered in the past?
I don't think so. And I'm looking at some of my news colleagues in the back of the room. I don't believe that to be the case, and we work very hard for that not to be the case. We still cover some pretty meaty issues every day, and I just don't think that's the case.
How about foreign news coverage? Has the reduction in size affected foreign news coverage?
Was our Afghanistan series, that was in 2011? Yeah, in 2011 we sent a reporter and a photographer to Afghanistan for a couple of months to cover what the Nebraska Guard was doing there. So I don't think we could be accused of a reduction in our foreign coverage.
Tell us more about your initial meeting with Warren Buffett. What does he do to make people feel at ease?
Well, first of all, I think he's really funny. And so he made me laugh, which, of course, makes everybody more at ease. I think we spent the first few minutes talking about the Wisconsin-Michigan State Hail Mary pass, which I hadn't seen, and so he was telling me about it. So I think that was – so we had found some common ground in college football rather quickly.
How much of the reduction in size has been caused by – this is sort of like percentages – caused by the recession, and how much by technology?
I'm not sure I understand that question.
both of them are serious, have had serious effects on newspapers. And I was just curious about how you break down the problem between the recession and technology.
I'm not sure how to answer that.
Okay. We'll move on. How are you attracting? Well, you, we answer. We you talked about that. How are you attracting younger viewers? Why was Omaha.com selected instead of Omaha, the Omaha World Herald? That is New York Times. I'm not sure I understand that one either.
Well, and I think New York Times is, isn't it NYTimes.com? Yeah, there's almost always some kind of a moniker. We just thought Omaha.com was a little more all-encompassing in terms of branding that site, in terms of what we do. I think it was the right decision. I think Boston does that. There's several markets that do that, and it's a pretty coveted URL. And so I think it's worked pretty well for us. I think if you type in Omaha World Herald, I think it takes you to Omaha.com. I hope I'm right about that. I think that's true.
Would you agree that your front page is much different, the kind of stories, that is, that you put there?
I don't know, much different than it used to be. Is that what you'd assume that to mean?
I would assume a little bit lighter in terms of feature stories on the front page rather than hard news.
Yeah, there's been a lot of questions about how do you attract younger readers, how do you get people's attention, and today's front page is a great example. We did a story on the military ship, and I met somebody for breakfast early this morning, and I got to tell you, I went up to the news rack to make sure I understood what that was. But yeah, I think we're getting more creative, and really all I've done to help facilitate that is we eliminated a lot of the rules we had about what we might run on page one and how the front page needs to look. And what we've done is made our page designers accountable for that, and they can try whatever they want, and sometimes it's really cool and a few times it's not. And then we talk about the times that it's not, and we try and learn from that. But, yeah, we're trying to be more, I don't know what the term would be, magazine-like, trying to draw people's attention, to draw them into our publication, and that's true both in print and online.
The World Herald owns a significant number of Nebraska newspapers. Will there be more acquisitions in the future? Will the rate of acquisition increase or decrease?
The last acquisition we did was in 2008, and it was of the Grand Island Independent, and I think that was a great deal for both sides. I think we're a better owner than they had, and we're delighted to have that newspaper as part of our business. So in terms of the rate of acquisition, for the last 4 years, it's been zero. So I guess if we did anything, it would increase. I think we'll acquire some businesses. I can't promise you that they would be newspapers, but I think we'll look to make some things where we can make 1 + 1 equal more than 2, and that's kind of the goal.
In the past, the World Herald has been slow to change, not allowing employees to have email for quite some time, not referring to the Quest Center by its name. Has the pace of adapting to change increased at the World Herald as the world has become faster?
I hope so. I think so. And I don't want to say that definitively, but yeah, I think the world demands that any business change more quickly than it used to. And like I say, we strive to achieve that, and I'm sure some days we do better than others.
Will the editorial writers be influenced by the fact that Warren Buffett will be their boss, or is their boss, that in effect he will be looking over their shoulders as they write?
Absolutely not. And I tried to cover that in my remarks. And I'd say again, Mr. Buffett has never called anyone in our organization about any news issue. Has not happened. I don't expect it to happen. I would be really surprised if it did happen. And, you know, to be candid, if it did start to happen, I think a lot of people would not stay, because that's really not what we're about. And I think it's important to remember that the chairman of Berkshire Hathaway is probably one of the smartest guys there that exists. And he is not going to buy something that has a priceless asset such as credibility and turn around and wreck it. I just don't believe that to be the case.
Will the purchase by Berkshire return the World Herald to its previous size, or will this only be accomplished by an increase in advertising?
If you're talking about page counts, that's going to be – page counts are going to be decided by an interesting-to-watch negotiation between the newsroom and the advertising department that happens every day. And that's going to be driven by the kinds of things we need to cover, the amount of space it might need. If we're doing a special series, the paper will grow. If we sell more advertising, the paper will grow. So, but it will not be dictated from Kiewit Plaza. I know that.
What would be your advice to college students who are thinking of majoring in journalism?
I think that the opportunities for journalists, both in the advertising side and in the news side, are better than ever. There are more outlets for your work product than ever before. There are more places to learn. There are more places to get started. I think it's an exciting business, and it's different than it used to be. It's not the same old, put the news out once a day. It's far more exciting, and I think there's a ton of opportunity.
What happens if Romney wins?
I had two responses to that. First of all, Warren and I covered that in our first meeting. We covered that specific question, by the way. It'll be up to our editorial board, such as it is, or our editorial staff, which is predominantly Mike Holmes and myself, will decide that. So I don't worry about that one. The other thing is, there's an interesting precedent for that when Peter Kiewit owned the World Herald, the first newspaper in America to call for Richard Nixon's resignation was ours. And one of the largest donors to Richard Nixon's 1972 reelection campaign was Peter Kiewit. I think that it might be good form to let him know what we're going to do, which I would suspect I would adopt good form. That's going to come from the newspaper, and there's a lot of campaign left, so who knows what's going to happen with that. So,
what kinds of advertising do you no longer get as much of? Classified advertising, of course, but what else?
Got a couple of our classified salespeople in the back. Our classified department's done exceptionally well, thanks to ladies like you. I think, by and large, the shift has been from printed ROP advertising or run-in-the-paper advertising to pre-printed advertising. Has probably been one of the biggest changes we've seen. National advertising is more cyclical than it probably used to be. Those have been the biggest changes. Employment advertising is probably the place where we've taken the biggest amount of change, I'd say.
How does the editorial board determine political endorsements?
We pay close attention to what's going on. We interview all the candidates outside of our reporters, so it'd be just our editorial group would interview those candidates. And we try and make the most informed, reasoned decision we can. And one thing I can tell you, others in this room have a lot more experience than I do, but trying to write your opinion out really tests what you're thinking, because it makes you think through all the lines of thought that got you there. Because you can't just, I suppose you could come out and just say, we endorse Barack Obama for president, period. That's your endorsement. But without some logic and reasoning behind it, it doesn't really hold a lot of water. So it's a pretty reasoned process. It's very time-consuming. And You know, we offer to interview candidates going from school board members all the way to presidential candidates, depending upon our depending upon the situation. So it's very time consuming, very analytical, and at the end of the day, you take all the factors and you make a call.
The World Herald has excellent staff writers. Do you employ a writing coach? Or I will add, as a former communication professor at UNO, do they all come from there? The communication director is here in attendance.
We employ a writing coach from time to time. We do a lot of coaching with the interns we bring in, I know, in the summer, and I know that's valuable to those folks. But we don't have a full-time writing coach at this point. Although, if you think about it, if you have a young reporter and an experienced editor, I would think that coaching takes place pretty much every day, but that's my own view.
The Freedom Center cost a lot of money at a time that newspapers were starting to feel the pinch. Any second thoughts about that?
No, that would be pretty unproductive at this point. So the plant, what I can tell you is, it works as advertised. It's highly automated because of the downtown site, and so we're pleased with the performance of the Freedom Center. But I don't think you look back on something like that. It's working well for us, and we're gonna move ahead.
The succession plan at Berkshire Hathaway gets a lot of attention. Does the World Herald have a succession plan? Is this something that Warren discussed with you?
Yes, we have a succession plan, and yes, I have made Mr. Buffett aware of how we would handle that, and that's an important exercise for any business to go through.
I want to certainly thank Terry Kroger for a very informative discussion of a very important development in this city last year, the purchase of the Omaha World Herald by Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. The Omaha Press Club offers its best wishes to Mr. Kroger as he moves forward in his position as publisher and CEO of the state's largest newspaper. I also want to thank our Press Club audience here for their insightful questions. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Terry Kroger, the publisher and chief executive officer of the Omaha World Herald. Mr. Kroger spoke about the recent sale of the newspaper to Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, February 16, 2012, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next two programs will be held on Friday, March 23rd, and Friday, April 20th, both at 12 o'clock noon. We'll hear two debates featuring the candidates for the House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District. In March, the debate will be between the Democrats seeking the position now held by Republican Lee Terry. In April, the debate will be between the Republicans running for that office. If you'd like to attend these or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.